It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Tackling the controversies, engaging the culture, challenging the status quo, and taking your calls. Dr. Brown is the director of Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Call now at 866-34-TRUTH and get into the line of fire.
All right, we mentioned yesterday, Time Magazine cover story, is America Islamophobic? You may have heard that there was a big dispute a couple weeks ago in Disneyland, California. There's a Muslim woman who is working there at Disneyland, and therefore part of the cast has to wear a certain Disney costume for what she's doing. And the first day of Ramadan, she decided she was going to wear her Muslim scarf, her hijab. Disneyland said, no, is this the kind of thing that we should be doing to stop Muslims from putting forth their religion in play, like Disneyland? Or is this being Islamophobic and prejudicial? Michael Brown, thanks for joining us today on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. You can interact with me in real time right now on our Facebook page, Ask Dr. Brown, A-S-K-D-R Brown. Now, I hope in the next few minutes that you'll agree with me, and then when I give you the opposite argument, you'll agree with me again, and then realize this is a bit more complex. But first, let me lay this out, okay? We as Americans pride ourselves on the origins of our country. And we know that although America has never been an entirely, quote, Christian nation, we were founded on a lot of principles having to do with religious liberty. And we pride ourselves on that. I quoted to you a few days back from George Washington when someone who was involved in a synagogue asked Washington, what can we expect as Jews? And he said, no prejudice, no bigotry here. And of course, in the time before Washington, people fled here for religious freedom. And the right notion of separation of church and state is that the state does not have the right to dictate to the church or to religion what it can and can't do. That's a positive thing. Now we have something like this come up where a woman working at Disneyland, we're not even talking about McDonald's where you wear a certain uniform, but it's not a costume. She's working at Disneyland. She has to be costumed a certain way because that's part of who they are. She finds out as she is applying for U.S. citizenship that she can actually wear a hijab legally. Again, that's the scarf. That's not the full head-to-toe covering the burqa. She finds out she can wear this, approaches the Disney people, and they say, well, we have to design it. Our costume people have to design it so it fits. Now look, let's say your role was you played Mickey Mouse, and you just converted to Orthodox Judaism. Would you now wear a yarmulke? Mickey Mouse with a yarmulke, would that be okay? Or now you're playing Minnie Mouse or something, but you're a Muslim woman and you want to wear a burqa? Well, obviously not. But when Disney didn't come through over a period of a couple of months, it's the first day of Ramadan, that's the holiest month of the year. From dawn till dusk, Muslims have no intake of food or liquid, and then they actually feast at night. It's fast and feast, but that's the way they do it. She decided to wear the hijab, and it created some problems. So I want you to first hear this in perhaps a way where you will think Disneyland did the right thing. Then I want to talk to you about something that happened in England with BBC. This was some time ago, but it seems to be a parallel. But hang on. France, early this year, drew a lot of heat because they have banned the wearing of the burqa, the head-to-toe covering, nationally. France, which has a rapidly growing Muslim population. So I want us to sort these things out, to think them through rationally. Are we being Islamophobic, or are we being stupid to think, yeah, some Disney costumed person can wear a hijab? So first let's hear from the Muslim woman and then from Disneyland. Go ahead, Joey.
I decided to wear the hijab because it was Ramadan. I said, you know what, I want to wear my hijab during the first day of Ramadan, which is Wednesday 11.
She's been a cast member for the last couple of years, so this is a fairly new request. She hasn't worn the headscarf before, so this is a fairly new request. Typically, somebody on stage position as hers wouldn't wear something like that. That's not part of the costume.
And then even worse, they're saying, well, we can't provide you with a hat or something. I was totally shocked. What do you mean a hat or something? Just let me wear my hijab.
She was given, as an interim solution, until something permanently could be worked out, we were trying to accommodate her with a backstage position that would allow her to work. So we gave her a couple different options for different roles backstage in the interim until we could work out a permanent solution. And she chose to not to take those and to go home.
I'm not here to scare anybody. I'm just here to wear my headscarf and work and keep my job. I don't want to be in the back. I'm a human being. I have feelings. Don't put me in the back.
Okay, yes, she's a human being. Yes, she has feelings. But if this is Disneyland, okay? This is not the United Nations. This is not a diplomatic, political. This is children going to Disneyland. Now, I'm not saying it's evil for her to wear a hijab, and I rather prefer the way the Muslim women cover themselves up to the way some of the ladies probably strut around at Disneyland wearing hardly anything. That's a whole separate subject, okay? We're talking about someone who's a costume performer and a cast is not going to wear the hijab. It sounds extreme to me, and it sounds, on the surface of it, without knowing all the details, that, of course, Disneyland handled it properly and said, hey, we'll try to find a solution that looks like a costume. In the meantime, you can keep working. You're not going to lose your job. Plenty of people work backstage, and they're human beings, too. All right, so you may have sentiments that are basically agreeing, okay, this is what Disneyland did is right. 866-34-TRUTH. Did they handle this rightly or wrongly? But let's look at this from another angle. This happened in England with BBC, with British Airways, as reported by BBC. Shirley Chaplin from Exeter said that she had been removed from frontline duties for refusing to remove a crucifix. Now, this happened with a British Airways worker, and they said, we don't allow any religious display of any kind. This also happened with a woman working with the Royal Devon and Exeter NHS Trust, and it said that their uniform and dress code prohibit frontline staff wearing any type of necklace. This is a necklace. It happened to be a crucifix, but she's a religious woman and wants to wear it. The trust said it would only be acceptable to wear a crucifix pinned inside a uniform lapel or pocket. Listen to what she had to say.
My faith is strong. I feel, as a Christian, I am being asked to hide the fact that I'm a Christian, and I don't see, is my human rights they're violating.
Ah, okay. This suddenly sounds like the Muslim woman saying, why do I have to go in the backstage? Why do I have to be treated differently? I am a human being. Why should I have to hide my faith? Now, are we comparing apples with oranges here? Is one thing a matter of costume? Another thing a matter of necklace? So it's any type of jewelry? Or in the British Airways case, there could be no religious display of any worker. So how did you feel? You go to the airline counter to check in, and the person behind the counter is, say, an Orthodox Jewish man with a long beard and a yarmulke. Or it's, this would be a little tricky, but the woman behind the counter is wearing a burqa, and she's working for U.S. Airways, and the only thing you can do is see her eyes through the outfit. Or the person is maybe a Hindu, and he's got his... it's not holy paint, but, you know, the orange paint or the dot on his forehead. I see it every trip to India. He's waiting on you there. You say, no, that's ostentatious. That is disruptive. That's not company uniform. Okay, well, then why, if company uniform says no necklace, should the person be allowed to wear a crucifix? Are we saying there's religious discrimination when it's us? But when it's a Muslim, we say it's okay. And then, what about France? I just want to get you thinking, because it's easy for us to react. This is July 13th. We made reference to it briefly on the program, but didn't devote a whole show to it. France's lower house of parliament overwhelmingly approved a ban on wearing burqa-style Islamic veils, part of a determined effort to define and protect French values that has disconcerted many in the country's large Muslim community. Let's say this is your community, and suddenly Muslim women are walking down the street covered from head to toe in these burqas. Is that something that is pushing out beyond propriety and now putting forth a point of view? Or is this religious liberty? We'll talk about this and a whole lot more. Stay with us. Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Contact us online, ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Just click contact to send your question. Many of them will answer on Fridays. You've got questions, we've got answers. Okay, I want to address this issue again of religious liberty. We as Americans are sensitive to the charges of discrimination, one, because of our history with slavery, with segregation. That's one reason that many Christians are making the mistake of thinking, well, we have to be tolerant of homosexual practice and the idea of same-sex marriage because we don't want to be bigoted people. We're sensitive to that charge. We somehow bend over backwards so as not to offend Muslims, whereas, of course, people protesting Ground Zero Mosque in New York City have said, you can build your mosque here when we can build a synagogue in Saudi Arabia. In other words, the tolerance only goes one way. But the specific case we're looking at, a woman working at Disneyland, Muslim woman, decides she's going to wear her hijab to work. And there's an article on the New Patriot Journal, obviously taking issue with her perspective. And it explains again that she was working in a theme park. She worked as a theme uniformed hostess at the Storyteller's Restaurant located in Disney's Grand California Hotel and Spa. The Disney said, look, you can't wear that. That's not part of the costume. If she came in wearing a 4-foot cross or crucifix that hung from her neck down to her ankles, they would have told her to take that off. I don't think this has anything to do with Islam. I think this has to do with Disney dress code. The question is, would we look at this as an example of religious persecution and discrimination if it was done against us? Would we say, how dare you, can't tell me I can't wear my cross? I mean, what if we came in with a large Bible and put it down? And, well, you're allowed to read the Bible, but it's not part of your costume. You can't be carrying it. You're against the Bible. Is that it? Or is it simply a matter of costume? It's nothing to do with discrimination. It's got nothing to do with Islam. Or is this another example of Islamophobia in America? Chad in Winston-Salem, thanks for calling the Line of Fire today.
Yes, sir.
What's your take?
I just have a couple quick points. British Airways, Disney World, they're their own entity. You know, you kind of have to play by their rules. If they say costumes only, no jewelry, no necklaces, it is what it is. You know, at some point, if you feel like you're being persecuted, that you might have to choose your own battles. And maybe that one's not one to choose to try to fight that, because I think that's a private entity makes their own rules.
So Chad, just on your first point, I work at McDonald's, and theoretically, McDonald's, because you're handling food, you're passing things back and forth, they have a rule of no necklaces. They don't want anything tangled. They don't want to say how long or how short. No necklaces. I come in with a crucifix, and they say you can't wear that. That may have it could have been a picture of Ronald McDonald hanging from my neck, and they'd still say I can't wear it. And we are wrong to pick that battle as one of religious persecution.
Yeah, whatever it is. You know, and here, another idea might be a bad analogy. Say you want to be a professional baseball player and you want to be a catcher. You say, well, I'm not going to use any pads or a mitt. Well, guess what? Uh-huh. You know, in our league, if you don't want to get killed, or the league rule is you have to wear shin guards, you know, a face protector, chest protector, and catch the ball with a glove. You know, you kind of have to play by their rules as they're set before you. I think we get to the point where we think our liberties and our freedoms allow us to push our own agenda instead of going by what someone has set before us. And I think that's in our country, it has let that happen. You know, when you bring all these other big entities in, ACLU, all these other people think, well, I'm going to push my agenda and do what I want to do. And it gives everybody the idea that, well, now it's personal. It's my religion that they're picking on. It's my ideas. It's my thoughts. And essentially, right. It's not any of that.
Right. And I think sometimes we have to look at it through the eyes of other religious people before we can see how we often appear. Hey, Chad, I appreciate you weighing in. Here, look, as Chad was speaking, I was thinking of the New York Yankees because he mentioned baseball. The New York Yankees, the most prestigious baseball team in the world and one of the most prestigious teams in all of sports, and it's considered a privilege to be on the New York Yankees. They have a rule. I don't know if it's always been, but it certainly is now, a no facial hair rule. Certainly no beard. You have to be groomed. Johnny Damon was famous playing on the Boston Red Sox, nemesis of the New York Yankees, and he had long hair and a beard, and their team actually won the World Series. I mean, they were good players despite the scruffy look. But he came to work for the Yankees. That meant no long hair, no beard. He got rid of it. Well, what if he had been a religious Jew? And as a religious Jewish man, he was required, according to some tradition, to grow a beard. You can't use certain things to clip a beard, but some would say you can't clip it at all. Well, could he say it was religious discrimination? No, because it had nothing to do with religion. It simply had to do with the way they groomed. Well, so let's stretch this a little bit. The burqa prohibition in France. Or how about Switzerland? Switzerland sees the influence of Islam, the influx of Islam. They see how they have a certain culture. They have a certain life setting, landscape, building, architecture. They have banned the building of minarets. And the Swiss are famously tolerant. They banned the building of minarets in Switzerland. I heard it. I thought this is kind of a good thing because these things are meant to send a message and take over. And you have the prayer calls coming from them and the prominence. They do change the landscape. But what if they said no building of steeples? Would I have said that's discriminatory? 866-34-TRUTH. Let me just throw out one other thing to give you a perspective. And then I'm going to shift over to the schools and the kids in a moment. Right now, the birth rates in much of Europe, Russia, Japan, other parts of the world are precipitously low. You need basically 2.1 people per couple, 2.1 kids per couple on average to sustain a society. If you have 1.1, 1.5, 1.7, as that next generation comes along and ages, the young generation is not there to support it. Well, in many of these countries, the birth rates are so low that no civilization has ever survived with them so low. The only catch is there's one group in their midst growing super rapidly, and that is Muslims, to the point that in England, the number one boy's name, recently passing Jack, was and is Muhammad. So is there something larger going on where there is an attempt to Islamicize society, where this is part of Muslim evangelism, you could say, to put forward their ideas in public ways, their outfits, their buildings, their mindset, so as to change the culture? And what about when it comes to school? Should there be freedom of prayer for Christian kids in school but not Muslims? Should the Muslims be allowed to pray facing Mecca while Christians say their prayers? Or is it better just keep prayer out of the school? We'll talk about that when we come back. Come to talking about two sides of religious discrimination today, through the eyes of people who feel they're discriminated against that are Muslims and through the eyes of those who feel they're discriminated against that are believers. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us on the Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. You can communicate with us in real time on Facebook, ASKDR Brown, Ask Dr. Brown page on Facebook. There's a great comment on Facebook from John. We're talking about a Muslim woman employed at Disneyland, had to wear a formal stage costume, wanted to wear the hijab, in fact did, the first day of Ramadan. That's the Islamic scarf. It's not the full body covering. It's called a burqa. So she wore the scarf, was told she couldn't. That's created quite a controversy. But, you know, some people think, well, this is just part of the religious discrimination in society that banned religious symbols. Others say, no, it's Disneyland. So John said, I know this is not the case, but imagine a Minnie Mouse wearing the Muslim outfit. Imagine Donald Duck in Amish garb with a matching chin beard. Now, he could be Amish and do a Lincoln thing, and it wouldn't look quite as bad. Imagine a Roman Catholic priest outfit on Dumbo. And then Bill says, a member of the Messianic Jewish synagogue I attend is not permitted to grow a beard. He's also required to be available to work on Shabbat, on the Sabbath. It's a stipulation in the work agreement that he signed. He's legally bound to abide by it. So how in the world can there be a lawsuit over an issue like this? I think, again, we have to put this in a separate context from another context that says all burqas are being banned in France. People have had a very angry reaction against that. It's highly discriminatory. But the French perspective is, and Nicolas Sarkozy has backed this, the ban on burqas and niqabs will go in September to the Senate, so it's likely to pass there. But here's what's going on. Europe, including Spain, Belgium, have similar bans in the works. France, which has Europe's largest Muslim population, about 5 million of the country's 64 million people, they're concerned that this is sending out a particular message. Now, in Italy, Catholic Italy, there was a ban on crucifixes in schools. So to me, you've got to step back and look at all these questions the same way. In other words, if you're going to give a right to a Christian, then you have to give a right to a Muslim. If you're going to give a right to a Muslim, you have to give a right to a Jew. If you're going to give a right to a Jew, you have to give a right to a Mormon. We're talking about the same principle. If you can take a holy day off from one religion, then why not another religion? And then you say, yeah, well, you know where this leads? This leads to Wiccans in prison asking to be recognized as religious groups. Where does one draw the line? It's not as cut and dry as we might think. So let's think about the schools, okay? Let's just take this argument over to the schools. My dear friend Lou Engel has been praying, fasting, asking God to reverse Engel versus Vital, which is when organized public prayer was removed from the schools of America in 1962. There was a 22-word generic prayer to God. It wasn't specifically Christian. It was a generic prayer to God. You could voluntarily be removed from it. I don't remember praying it as a boy in the New York schools, but it was prayed in many other parts of the country. It got pulled out. David Barton has documented, in his view, what shows how we had a massive moral decline, educational decline, social decline in America after 62 when prayer was taken out of schools. Now, people have been fighting to have the right to pray in school. A moment of silence where everyone can pray to their God or gods or pray to themselves. Well, what does that accomplish? I mean, is that what we're after? Okay, do we reinstitute the generic prayer to God? Or do we say that we will have in the morning 1 minute free where Christians can pray? Got mainly Christians in your school. You've got a couple of atheists, some others, but they don't really care. Christians are going to pray. What happens when the Muslims come and the Muslims now want to have their minute of prayer? What happens, like in a school in New Jersey, where special rights and privileges are given to them so that they can take breaks to pray at the right times and prostrate themselves to do it? whereas the Christians weren't given rights. Do we want to extend equal rights to pray to everybody the same way? Do we want to open the door for public Muslim prayer? There are some folks, actually folks that I know here from the Charlotte area, that were outraged when in opening prayer at Congress, a Hindu leader got up to pray. He was not praying to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Okay, he was a Hindu. He got up to pray, and these people felt it was their sacred duty because of the history of America and the Christian origins of America or Christian roots and the origins of Christian prayer in Congress, that they got up and publicly rebuked this man. In fact, there were several of them from a family that one got up, and after the rebuke, another got up. You know, they were escorted out, another got up. Of course, this Hindu priest was a little bit shaken by the whole thing and went on to pray his generic prayer to somebody out somewhere. But is that just part of religious pluralism? Do we have to just wake up to the fact that America is different now? And that if we're not going to be tolerant of all these different religions, then we're not going to have the right to practice our own religion? Or are we forgetting that America is a Christian country and America is established on Christian principles, and if we don't stand up for Christian principles, that God's not going to bless us? I mean, it's a polarizing issue, but I think it's one that when you have these kinds of things come up, rather than have a gut-level reaction, I mean, the Disneyland thing, based on the facts that, as I know them, is pretty simple. So it's a costumed job. You can't wear the hijab, nor could you wear, as I said, a long cross or come in with your outfit emblazoned with a million pictures of Mickey Mouse, because that's not what the costume was about. That's not what the worker was there to do. But I wonder if, when we're in the same situation, we are willing to extend the same benefits, the same privileges, the same rights to others. Joey, play that clip from the worker in England again. There was a policy that said no necklaces, and she was told, therefore, you can't wear a crucifix as a necklace, just wear it kind of as a hidden pin, and to her, that was denying her faith. Just play that clip again.
My faith is strong. I feel, as a Christian, I am being asked to hide the fact that I'm a Christian, and I don't see, is my human rights they're violating?
See, she may well be right, and there may have been actually a prejudice against Christians on her job, and it may be part of systematic religious persecution in England. Look, a street preacher was arrested recently. He was preaching scriptures on the streets of England. This just happened a couple months ago. Someone came up to him and asked him privately, did he consider homosexual practice sinful? He said yes and went back to preaching without mentioning it. He was arrested. But on the surface of it, I don't know that it's anything other than a no jewelry policy at work. So I think we do well to think through the issues, to examine them, to not rush to judgment before we cry religious persecution. Where it's there, hey, let's stand up. We come back. I want you to hear a fiery sports story. Changing gears. Stay with us. I've got a few more things to talk about with regard to Islam, even Sharia law. But before I talk about that, every so often there's something that's so out there that even it doesn't relate to anything we're talking about on the show. I've just got to bring it in. One of these things, I wonder if there's more behind the news than we're hearing. Are you ready? This was from August 31st, so 2 days ago. Irvine, California. There's a golfer at the Shady Canyon golf course. He lands a shot in the rough on Saturday. On his next swing, his club snagged a rock, causing a spark that that lit the rough ablaze and eventually attracted 150 firefighters to the scene and sparked a 12-acre blaze. Well, it's a funny story. It's can you picture this? He's swinging. Next thing there's a that quick. The fire spreads 12 acres. Thankfully, no reports of anyone hurt. Fire officials say the fire burned through the rough into vegetation next to the course and over two dry, brushy hillsides. No charges were filed against the golfer. But I just wonder if there was anything behind the scenes going on here. Was this maybe a believer that God had been dealing with about their golf addiction and seeking to call them away from neglecting their family because of their addiction to golf? And they're out there, and suddenly you swing and start a 12-acre blaze with 150 firefighters. Or maybe, again, you don't know the story. Guy's probably golfing with someone. Maybe this guy was being warned about hell. Maybe this guy was being told there's a hellfire. There's a judgment. You can't play games with this. And the guy's mocking it. Next thing he swings and sets a 12-acre blaze. I mean, that would get my attention. So I don't know. Maybe one day we'll find out there is more to this story than we imagine. But I want to share it with you since we are called the Line of Fire. Anyway, and it is a fire story. I thought I'd throw it in. Okay. In all seriousness, I have been talking about looking at things through the eyes of Muslims, looking at things through the eyes of Christians, people of different religions, and saying if we expect treatment a certain way, we should extend it to others the same way. Obviously, within limits, there are certain things that are Christian history and Christian tradition in our nation. And we should be concerned if in a Muslim neighborhood they want to start to enforce Sharia law, be a law to themselves, that should concern us. And especially because some of the aspects of Sharia law are very much against American values and the standards of our country and even a biblically based morality. That's an area of concern, and it is happening. There are parts of America where, for all practical purposes, Sharia law is being enforced. That's an area of concern. But it's important that whatever we do is level-headed and even-handed. Let me give you one example. It's easy to pull verses from the Quran and to say, look, it says kill the infidel, in short. Kill them. Butcher them. Whoever dies in the path of war for Allah goes to paradise. And you pull those verses out, and then you look at Muslim terrorists, you look at the things that they do, and they're horrific, and they're inspired by verses like this in the Quran, and you say that Islam is a bloody, violent religion, and therefore we oppose it however we can as an arm of terrorism in America. Forget religious liberty. This is evil. On the flip side, Muslims will say to us, well, what do you do with the verses in Joshua about go and kill all the Canaanites? And Moses telling the Israelites to do the same thing in the previous generation. And then Saul being called to slaughter the Amalekites. And then all the prayers for God to destroy and kill the enemies. You say, no, those have to be rightly interpreted. Okay, so here's my only request. Make sure, however you're going to interpret the Bible fairly, and according to acceptable principles of biblical interpretation, just make sure you're doing the same with the Quran. Now, by the way, I do believe there is a distinction between what the Quran says and what Scripture says. But all I'm saying is it's all too easy for us to react and get inflamed. Let us find out the truth, and then let us act wisely based on truth. And let us apply equal weights and measures. Remember, throughout the five books of Moses, it is something God speaks against, and in Proverbs and elsewhere, unequal weights, unequal measures. Let's apply the same standard of justice. Let's apply the same standard of truth. Let's apply the same standard of equity. Let's apply the same standard of interpretation to religious texts. And then, trust me, we'll have plenty to divide over, plenty to differ over, but at least it will be based on truth. That makes sense to you? We'll be right back. Thanks for joining us today on the Line of Fire broadcast. Hey, just remember, if you miss any of the programs, go to our website, askdrbrown.org, and click on the Line of Fire. You can subscribe by podcast. Every week we have a special resource offer. This week, some of my most important writings on revival and Jesus Revolution are available at half price, but it's on the website only. And then there's always a lively discussion. Maybe you listen to this delayed. Maybe you're not able to call in and talk, or maybe you just like to express your feelings in writing. So you can always do so at the website, askdrbrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. We started the show talking about the Muslim woman at Disneyland who felt she was discriminated against when she could not wear a hijab, the headscarf on her job. She wore it the first day of Ramadan. Others said, no, she signed the contract. There were specific arrangements. And more importantly, she was a costumed worker. What about other ethical decisions or religious decisions that you make on your job? Someone commented on Facebook, I wouldn't be happy with someone walking around carrying a Bible during their work time and praying out loud, because that's not what they are being paid to do, or it's drawing a certain attention to them. Michael, on our Facebook page, asked, how about the grocery cashier who refused to scan the customer's bacon? Now, let me tell you a little story. Change subjects here for a second. Over the years, it's fascinating. When God changed my life, saved me, December of 71, December 17th, I said, I'll never put a needle in my arm again. And by God's grace, that was it. 2 days after that, quit getting high in any way. And that was it. About 7 years ago, I became convicted about drinking Diet Coke, really soda in general. And it's actually a bit of an addiction. I drank Diet Coke, I mean, daily, sometimes a bunch of bottles over the course, I don't know, big bottles, little bottles over the course of a day. And I just quit, and I was fine. But I've always had an issue with chocolate. Just had it just about every day of my life growing up as a kid. And soda, to just get rid of it cold turkey sometimes been a challenge. So one particular time I decided I'm not going to have any chocolate for a while, a week, month, whatever it was. And I went to the supermarket. I had to pick up some items for the family. And I noticed that they had chocolate fudge on sale. Now, it wasn't just chocolate fudge that they normally didn't have, but it was chocolate fudge on sale, which is almost like sinful to pass it by when it's chocolate fudge on sale. So I got a little chunk, dollar something chunk, even though I had said I'm not going to have sweets for this stretch of time. As I'm checking out, the lady, yeah, they don't say anything when you're checking out. You just go through, you know, they don't talk to you about what you're buying. She holds it up and she goes, good. And then she looks at me and goes, sinful. It's like, oh, come on. I can't even get away with having a little piece of fudge. Now you say to me, what did you do? Well, I ate it. I did eat it anyway. But as for the lady who refused to scan the customer's bacon, obviously, there's going to be a lot of things she refuses to scan, I guess because she thinks people shouldn't eat it. Probably not the best job. Probably if you are a checkout counter person and you cannot, you got a problem with people eating healthy, probably that's not, I'm so sorry to disappoint you, probably not the right job. So here's the deal. If the employer has certain values, standards, you sign up to live by them, you live by them. If you can't and they can't live with you not doing it, find another job. If it's a legitimate matter of religious discrimination, then let's make it known, let's stand up for it, and let's put forth truth. All right. And can I suggest, don't mix bacon with fudge, and you'll be even happier and live a healthier life. Closing word of wisdom, AskDrBrown.org. We'll see you there.